The process, the politics, what's being said on the surface, and what's really happening behind the scenes. Just ahead, a look at the battle over Jacksonville's human rights ordinance. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, always live at 9, and now catch the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. You can also watch the show video on demand at tvjax.com. Just ahead, we want your calls as dueling HRO bills move ahead in the Jacksonville City Council. Where are you on this local issue? It's coming to a head once again. Give us a call, 549-2937. Let us know where you stand. Also this morning, Go Red for Women, helping the women in your life take charge of heart health. That's coming up. Plus, it's a one-of-a-kind party in Fernandina Beach. That's later in the hour. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, two competing bills taking up the matter of this city's human rights ordinance will be debated next week at the Jacksonville City Council. Here in Florida, more than a dozen cities have adopted a human rights ordinance that includes non-discrimination protections for the LGBT community. However, Jacksonville remains the largest American city that has yet to do so. We begin the hour with a closer look at where things stand on the HRO, as it's called. A.G. Gankarski has been following the story for months now at the website Florida Politics. He joins us now with a look at everything happening with this, from the players in the issue, what's being said for publication, and what's going on behind closed doors. A.G. Gankarski, good morning.
Good morning.
And when it comes to this matter of the human rights ordinance, what are your questions and what's your opinion? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us. And so there are two bills that will be discussed February 9th at the Jacksonville City Council, one sponsored by Councilman Tommy Hazzouri that would put this to a simple up or down vote, one sponsored by Councilman Bill Gulliford that would potentially let all of the citizens of Duval County vote on this matter. Let's begin by discussing these two pieces of legislation and their prospects for passage.
Okay. Well, you want to take them one by one. I'll start with Gulliford's because he filed his first, which, you know, sort of a surprise to Lenny Curry, who, you know, didn't expect that. He wanted more time for his process of discernment. The Gulliford referendum bill would actually change the city's charter, and it would have the sexual orientation, sexual identity, gender expression protections, housing, public accommodations, and employment. So basically, you couldn't be fired, you couldn't be evicted, you couldn't be denied use of a bathroom. Those kind of things would come into play, and that would be a charter change. And opponents of the bill actually want the referendum. They want that up and down vote like they had in Houston after its own equivalent of the HRO. It was repealed via referendum by a 60-40 margin, give or take.
Bill Gulliford also wants this to go to a referendum in the summer. Critics say presumably because more people that are opposed would come out to vote it down rather than in a general election in November when presumably more supporters would come out to vote it in.
Right. I mean, that's a very important thing. He doesn't want the high turnout election. And, you know, this is Republican 101. You want lower turnout because you want the motivated voters. You want the evangelicals coming out. You want the older people. They're your high propensity voters. You know, younger voters, as we saw, say, during the last mayoral election, don't turn out in the numbers that you expect. So, you know, Gulliford's initiative is targeted toward, you know, the bill not succeeding. It stacks the deck against it. And, you know, it's an interesting gambit. And if you know anything about city council, you know Bill Gulliford is the master operator in terms of procedure, in terms of, you know, how to play the game. I mean, you see it time and time again with bills. And, you know, this is no exception to that because Gulliford, you know, is basically massaging this to make a point. And he won't withdraw his bill, which, you know, kind of surprised me given the mayor's statement. We'll get to that in a few minutes.
We'll get to that in a minute. Let's talk about Tommy Hazzouri's bill, former mayor, city councilman who has put forth legislation asking the 19-member city council to simply vote on this matter of expanding the HRO.
Right. And the Hazzouri bill has broad backing, you know, from Jacksonville Coalition for Equality and Equality Florida to the Jacksonville Chamber, which pushed last week for a fully inclusive HRO. It adds the so-called six words, you know, to the human rights ordinance, sexual identity, sexual orientation. and gender identity. And basically, it just, you know, gives those, encodes those protections. And it's something that happens in other places. We see modified versions of that, you know, throughout the country. You know, but this is the all-inclusive HRO, and it's similar to the one that, you know, fell 17-2 4 years ago in the first vote. But, you know,
and then failed 10-9 in the second vote.
Right, which, you know, modified it. But there are religious exemptions built into this one. They've tried to write a bill that actually protects religious organizations and, you know, a reaction among the faith community is mixed on it.
Give us a call at 549-2937 with your thoughts on the city's human rights ordinance debate. Mayor Lenny Curry, on the last day of January, after a long period of keeping mum on his thoughts, came out and while he did change city codes with regard to city worker protections, he also issued a statement saying that he did not think any additional legislation was needed when it comes to the city's human rights ordinance.
No, he actually said prudent.
He said he didn't think it would be prudent.
Right. And that's an important, I mean, Lenny Curry, you have to look at the semantics with him. I mean, he's, you know, Republican Party boss turned mayor. I mean, the guy is a consummate politician. And, you know, prudent suggests that this isn't the right time right now. You've got the pension tax issue they're trying to get through in referendum, and that's going to, you know, likely be a hard lift as, you know, demagogues on the issue, you know, come out against it. City council's pushing for it. The mayor's office is going to push for it. And if this thing gets out of Tallahassee, that's going to be priority the mayor's office. So he said the legislation would be prudent. What he did, however, was extend, you know, employment protections to city workers, which is about 6,000 people. And just as crucially, people who do business with the city, your vendors, you know, including your J.B. Coxwell's, W.W. Gay's, food service vendors, and so on. So, you know, it does have effect. And it's been described to me by people in the inner circle as a non-coercive way to do this, leading by example. And, you know, they will have data they didn't have in a year or two, you know, to come back to the issue and say, well, see, this didn't affect anything. So let's extend it, you know, perhaps farther. You know, there's a reason that you're seeing the activist community kind of stand down in criticism. The Jacksonville Coalition for Equality lauded Curry for the step he took. And the dialogue between Jimmy Midyet, who leads the JCE, and Lenny Curry is really good compared to where it was 4 years ago with Alvin Brown, where there wasn't communication. In this case, there is communication. There seems to be an understanding of the process. And, you know, it seems to lead the activists to trust in gradualism a little bit more than they seem like they would when this process launched. But that being said, their preference is to get the Missouri bill through.
Yeah. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Now, as you mentioned, the Jacks Chamber supported Lenny Curry over Alvin Brown for mayor. They are strongly in support of this all-inclusive legislation. They do not want to see this go to a referendum. The chamber and the mayor's office do not seem to be on the same page.
Right. I mean, it's something where the chamber came out a couple of days before Curry's statement. And, you know, I believe Kerry Stewart from the mayor's office was there for the vote and, you know, chamber backed that. And there was some discussion whether, you know, the transgender population would be protected by, you know, the chamber recommendation. But obviously, you know, that went out. They went fully inclusive. You know, they related it to the struggle for integration, you know, a quarter century ago. And, you know, something that the Curry administration just decided to go in a different direction. And, you know, the real question is, you know, where are the chamber people speaking out? You can get people to talk in the background. I mean, I know I can, I know you can, and others. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're not coming out and saying...
Well, let me just say right now that we have booked Jack's Chamber President Audrey Moran. She has asked for time on this program. She will appear 1 week from today.
Okay.
So it remains to be seen what she has to say.
Yeah.
But we do await her remarks.
Yeah, we definitely await her remarks. But, you know, that's the thing. The Curry administration, you know, took sort of a middle path that didn't make anybody, you know, completely happy. Mm-hmm. The evangelicals are not happy with the expansion of prerogatives to... Yeah.
And what about Shad Khan saying he feels that the city of Jacksonville is so behind the times on this, that this is like civil rights, this should have been done years ago?
Right. I mean, Shad Khan, when I asked him the question, was kind of surprised by it because it does seem backward. It does seem atavistic. Shad Khan does business in London. He does business throughout the world. And, you know, we're behind the times on this one. And, you know, for somebody like him who knows how the global, you know, landscape plays out, you know, he just thinks it's, you know, an atavistic debate. And he told me he talked to Alvin Brown about it. Alvin Brown did not follow his counsel. You know, remains to be seen what Lenny Curry is going to do beyond, you know, what we've already seen.
You also reported that Mac Brunson, the pastor at the First Baptist Church, told a Christian publication that he believes the human rights ordinance is a special privilege ordinance.
Right. And, you know, it was an interview with a lot of talking points, special privilege ordinance, you know, cast aspersions on LGBT people and so on. And, you know, it was an audience that was tailor-made for that. But, you know, First Baptist is going to be heavily involved in this process. Tomorrow, before the Committee of the Whole meeting, they have a lunch meeting with pastors. It's closed to media. And you have to actually register as an anti-HRO pastor, present evidence to your church, and so on. So they attempt to vet people at the door to, you know, essentially rehearse talking points ahead of the discussion in council later that day. So, you know, Thursday at 12:30, the First Baptist Church cafeteria is hosting a lot of pastors who are going to come in, you know, from out of state, you know, out of the city. They're led by John Stenberger's organization. John Stenberger is actually, you know, an Orlando, Florida lawyer, and Orlando has these protections, ironically enough. So, you know, one wonders if he's going to bring stories about how, you know, the ordinance has brought Orlando to its knees economically. We haven't heard any evidence of that yet. You know, what they tend to do is localize their pitches. They tend to talk about, well, this is a family-friendly town, and this, that, and the other, and there's no prejudice here, and there's no discrimination, and, you know, so on. So you can expect a lot of that tomorrow, and it's going to be driven by people outside of the area.
Let's go to your calls right now as we discuss the human rights ordinance, latest with Florida Politics AG Gankarski, 549-2937 to join us. Mike is on the south side. Hi, Mike.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question with regards to Hazuri's bill. As I understand, he's wanting a city council vote, correct?
That's right.
So what would be his motivation for doing that? It would seem that it would be one of two things. Either he thinks that this is a sincere bill, he thinks that it's got the opportunity to pass, or he's wanting to get people, you know, the new city council members on record for their stance on it. Do you guys have a thought with regards to that, with what's motivating him? It's not hard for me to figure out what's motivating Gulliver, especially if he thought Hazuri was going to put forth a bill. Gulliver would probably want to get the jump on it and whatnot. But Hazuri seems to be the more interesting one in terms of motivation. Would you care to comment on that?
All right, thanks.
And I'll take my answer off the
air. That's Mike
on
the south side. Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Mike. You know, Hazuri's motivation is simple. He wants the protections in advance. He's talked about this on the campaign trail, and he got more votes citywide than anybody in that election in 2015, you know, as he beat Jeff Youngblood, and he wanted the fully inclusive HRO. He's been consistent in that position. You know, he said it was going to be a priority. He said he was going to wait for the mayor to do something on it. You know, and he waited until late December, and then Gulliver's bill came out, and Hazuri's like, you know, I'm going to drop mine too. And, you know, it's really something where Hazuri just wants these things done. You know, he was backed by pro-equality forces throughout the election, along with some other council people. And there were a lot of council people on the campaign trail who said, yes, we support HRO expansion. So, you know, Hazuri...
Are the votes there? And let me ask you, too. Okay, as you mentioned, Tommy Hazuri got more votes than anyone on the ballot in Duval County, anyone running for
without
any office.
Without party help, really.
Anyone on the ballot, the most popular politician in town. And he is strongly in support of this. A UNF poll last year found 62% bipartisan support for this inclusive legislation. We are the last Florida city not to have passed this legislation. In fact, we're the largest American city nationwide who hasn't passed this legislation. Why do we continue to see this extreme caution coming out of the mayor's office? It would seem to most of the observers of this that the mayor's office has all the political cover in the world. The business community is four square behind him. The chamber, four square behind him, pushing him, in fact, to come out in support of this legislation.
Well, it's more complicated than that. I want to take that piece by piece. The UNF polls, they're, you know, solid polls, but they tend to skew a little bit left. I think they gave us Charlie Crist as governor, and I think they gave us Amendment 2 passing for the medical marijuana in 2014. So, mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of a leftward skewing in those. If you look at some internal polls, there are people, you know, who oppose the HRO expansion. Say 60% of Republicans, you know, oppose it. There are people who are more neutral on the issue, say that the split is 50-50 across party lines. You know, so that's one matter there is that you don't really know, you know, where the issue stands with the people. I mean, I'm suspecting it's closer to 50-50 on it.
But even if that's true, how does this hurt Lenny Curry as a politician? Who's going to challenge Lenny Curry from the right? Really, let's be realistic.
Yeah, I mean, I tend
to... How does this hurt him?
I agree with you, but I mean, if you look at, you know, the John Delaney administration, the constant worry is Delaney, you know, with the moderate path was that somebody would come up from the right and demagogue and make that reelection campaign
difficult.
Is
that a realistic fear at Jacksonville City Hall right now in February of 2016?
Well, right now we've got rosy economic numbers and so on, except for the pension deal, which is, you know, really Curry's big priority right now is getting the money right in the city so that we can fix the roads and get public safety right and all of these other things. And, you know, that's a big lift for Curry. And I think that's really the priority there is, you know, making sure we get this pension albatross, you know, the unfunded liability off of our backs a little bit. And, you know, you can only message on one big issue at a time.
At a time,
I mean,
sure.
We saw a better Jacksonville plan.
And someone just fact-checked me, Kelly just fact-checked me on Twitter. The UNF poll did not include gender identity and expression. So actually, thank you for that, Twitter. Sharp listeners pointing out, as you pointed out to AG, the support when you do include that full inclusivity, probably not at 62%.
Yeah.
Okay. Linda in Deerwood. Hi, Linda. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to go a little bit step further what AG just said, because it seems like the pension deal is what is going to give Mayor Curry cover. But I think we have settled for less than leadership because we didn't push anybody in the election to tell us what they were for. They wanted to look, they wanted to hear from people. So you're telling me all the people that came out for this, so where are we? So our asking is it, and if there's no discrimination, then why did he broaden something with the city? There's no discrimination, then there would be no need for you to change how people are potentially could be discriminated against with the city and with city contracts. I think let's be fair. Mayor Curry ran as not a politician. He's a master politician. Now he's got the pension. We can't do any downtown development. I can't, you know, can't walk and chew gum at the same time because we have to have one thing to message. If that was the case back in the 50s and 60s, black people would not have in Jacksonville, if they had, you know, waited on the slow federalism, would still be on the back of the bus. And I think it's atrocious for Jacksonville when we're trying to tell the world we're not a bumpkin town anymore. We're not Crawford. We're Jacksonville. It just makes us look ignorant. And I don't care. I'm a Christian as well, but I don't buy all these bigoted Christians who want to tell everybody else how to live. Everybody's going to have to stand before Jesus and God and come before judgment. None of us should be able to judge people individually. I'm just so upset that, once again, a politician, we elect representative government, we elect them to do the hard decisions, and they're all opting out, and we're letting them. We're going to give them a pass so he can see how this works for 2 more years. It's atrocious. And I look forward to meeting Mayor Curry on the street and telling him this myself directly. Thank you.
Yeah, she makes salient points, especially in that, you know, more leadership on this issue morally seems required. However, city council is deliberating the two bills. City council passes legislation. They're the policymaking body. And it's something where if, you know, city council, I mean, it's said there might be 12 or 13 votes in favor of the Hazuri bill. If that were to pass, then...
That's a supermajority.
Right. If you got 10 votes, then, you know, we see if Lenny Curry's going to veto this legislation or not.
Do you think he would?
You know, I don't think so, given the reaction of
the
activists.
They can't just let it stand, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when, you know, again, it goes back to prudence. You know, it goes back to, you know, can we handle this fight right now? Because, you know, we've seen it in Indiana, we've seen it in other places. You know, it gets reduced to the lowest common denominator by opponents, and it becomes a very, you know, a very scabrous fight.
Let's go to Robert in Springfield. Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
Hi. This is a great program, and thanks for taking my call. My struggle is with the word prudent, actually. The city of Jacksonville just said that, you know, there's discrimination, that our employees and contractors need this. And so my concern is, well, if they need this, wouldn't it be prudent for non-discrimination for everyone all the time? To me, prudent means, or having discrimination would never be prudent not to fix it. And then also, if the chamber came out in support, and I think I saw in the newspaper where like 100 faith leaders or pastors have come out in support, then that to me seems pretty prudent. And then the people that are city employees and contractors, does that mean that their rights end when they clock out for the day?
Okay, thanks for that. We have a related tweet from a listener. I can't imagine being a city worker right now knowing the mayor doesn't think my life off the clock should look like life on the clock.
Yeah, I mean, that's the counter argument. You know, Lenny Curdy did not go far enough, and there are people who are saying that, and there are people who are strongly in favor of full expansion.
And to give fair voice, there's an equally largely vocal contingent against full expansion.
Right. And, you know, it's really something where with this particular move, you know, it was a Solomonic kind of move. I think Jacksonville Coalition for Equality might have used that term in their email. I can't remember offhand. But Solomonic move in that he sort of basically, you know, worked out a provisional compromise for the time being. You know, what likely will happen is we're going to see that, you know, this law has no impact on the companies, being the city or the, you know, contractors. It's going to be something that is a protective piece of legislation that is a building block for something else if council doesn't pass a Zuri bill or the Gulliford bill, you know, which changes, you know, the schematic completely.
One more call. Dave on the South Side. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi, Mr. Gancarthy mentioned that this is a pastor mentioned that this was a special privilege. There are no institutions in this country that have more special privileges than churches. And the level of involvement of electioneering by some members of the religious community on this issue and others is testing the limits of their special privilege to be tax exempt. And frankly, I'm getting very, very disillusioned and disappointed in the behavior of some Christian leaders when they have so little confidence in their faith that they have to resort to trying to change the laws to use the police powers of the state to force the rest of us to live according to their religious beliefs and dogma. That is not what this country stands for. That's not what the Constitution says, the Bill of Rights. It basically separates a wall of separation between church and state. And there are too many evangelicals and other religious leaders in this country today who are crossing that barrier, who climbing over that wall and trying to use the jackbooted thugs and the police powers of the state to force me to comply with their religious beliefs.
And all right. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call.
Yeah. You know, this is kind of a illustrator of the symbiosis between the politicians and the pastors. You saw it this weekend with the press conference. John Guns was there, you know, talking about the 22-month-old that was shot. And it was something where you saw politicians and pastors basically yoked as one. And this happens time and time again. Alvin Brown, you know, messaged very hard with the pastors. Lenny Curry, you know, so far has done the same. And, you know, before that, the Peyton administration, the Laney administration, and on. And, you know, that's sort of the consequence. The erosion of church and state separation, you know, is a consequence of using the church as the message on other issues. And, you know, it's kind of an indicator of where we are. And it would be interesting to see if perhaps some enterprising attorney was to, you know, file a suit challenging First Baptist Church's tax-exempt status. I'd be interested in seeing how that went.
In the meantime, the council will take up these dueling measures on the 9th.
Actually, they're taking them up tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Yeah. The process will go from there.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be two more of these committees of the whole. The vote's going to be on March 3rd. There's going to be council meetings in between, of course. So there's going to be plenty of pro and con commentary on the human rights ordinance expansion. And something I've heard, regarding the debate, people who are sort of on the fence on the issue think that both sides have insulted each other. So, they're thinking that the extremists are presenting each other, sort of negating each other. So, I think they want to hear more about the actual effects of the law. I think they want to hear more, substantial debate than, some of the fear-mongering on one side and, fear-mongering on the other, for that matter. I think, the people want to get down to policy who are actually making the policy decision.
Always good to have your analysis. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
A.G. Gankarski writes for the website Florida Politics. Much more still ahead later. A unique party up in Fernandina, the documentary Legacy of Faith, and up next, Go Red for Women. It's American Heart Month. That's coming up.
On the next Fresh Air, Bassem Youssef, who became known in the U.S. as the Jon Stewart of the Arab world after he created and hosted a show of political satire inspired by The Daily Show. He started it after the revolution that overthrew Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak. But the next president, Mohamed Morsi, didn't like being satirized, which led to the end of the show. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Does the separation of church and state mean that religion has no place in our politics? I'm Kyle Reese of Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church.
And I'm Nancy Bronner of the One Jacks Institute. Join us for WJCT's quarterly program, Faith Matters, as we examine the role of faith in the political process.
We'll hear from a variety of faith perspectives and take your calls.
That's Faith Matters, Thursday morning at 9 on 89.9 WJCT.
When it comes to redeveloping downtown Jacksonville, the best laid plans have often turned sour because of spiraling costs or problems with infrastructure. But despite setbacks, the city has made strides in recent years. In Community Thread Downtown Developing, we talk with the movers and shakers who are transforming downtown and meet others who say challenges still remain. Log on to wjct.org/events/community-thread to submit your questions or to RSVP to be part of our studio audience on February 11th.
Coming up on the next reveal, Donald Trump has awakened a sleeping giant.
If we're a party of the big tent where we want diversity, we want blacks and immigrants and women and gays and everybody else in it, but we don't want conservatives, then we as conservatives need to go somewhere else.
We go on the road in search of Donald Trump's America on the next reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back to the show. Well, you can help all the women in your life take charge of their health in one visit to the doctor. A single well woman visit can give a head to heart to toe view of their overall health. Now, February is American Heart Month, and our mothers, daughters, sisters, and friends can often be at risk. Heart disease and stroke cause 1 in 3 deaths among women each year. That's more than all cancers combined. Fortunately, we can change that because 80% of cardiac and stroke events can be prevented with education and simple lifestyle changes. Now, we want to talk right now about National Wear Red Day. It's part of the Go Red for Women movement, helping all of us live healthier lives. We're pleased to welcome Florida Blue CEO Pat Garrity. Good to see you, Pat.
Good to see you, Melissa.
And also with us, Dr. Carolyn Landolfo, a Mayo Clinic cardiologist. Good to see you, doctor.
Thanks for having us.
They're both here with details about the importance of heart health, Go Red for Women, and a look ahead to a big event in downtown Jacksonville. Jax is going red this week. More about that in a moment. But first, Pat, let's begin with you. Florida Blue is really involved with Go Red for Women. You really want to raise awareness about this because heart disease is the number one killer of women.
It absolutely is, and there's really not a lot of awareness around that, Melissa. So Florida Blue has this mission of helping people and communities achieve better health, and it really dovetails beautifully with the American Heart Association and this movement to raise awareness and help women understand their risks in heart disease.
Now, you're the chair of Men Go Red. You're trying to, as a man, raise awareness about this because we think of heart disease as something that affects guys, and we tend to think of breast cancer as something that women need to be worried about. But as women, we need to know our risk factors for heart disease.
Absolutely. And I got to tell you, Melissa, someone very special in my life, Inger Loftheim, is leading the Go Red movement. So she put me on the spot to get men involved, because why shouldn't men express their interest and concern for the women in their life? So we've started this movement, Men Go Red, and we've got a number of men in the community now who are stepping up.
And we'll talk in a minute about National Wear Red Day and a big event this Friday in downtown Hemming Park. Dr. Landolfo, let's talk about the data. An estimated 44 million women in the U.S. affected by cardiovascular disease. And almost all women have at least one risk. I didn't realize this. 90% of women have at least one risk factor for heart disease or stroke.
That's very true. There are multiple risk factors for heart disease, including having high cholesterol, high blood pressure, being overweight. Being a diabetic is a very powerful risk factor, as well as smoking. So women really need to go to their doctor and ask them, am I at risk for heart disease? Tell me about my heart disease risk factors and what can I do to control them?
In fact, I found this out the hard way myself when I went in for an annual visit and they encouraged me to get this, what they called a VAP test. I can't remember what the acronym stood for, but when my blood work came back, they told me my cholesterol was just slightly elevated. I was shocked because I eat such a healthy diet. And I thought, how can I have high cholesterol? But I did. I had slightly elevated cholesterol, and they kind of, you know, schooled me a little bit that I had, you know, with age, everybody, this becomes an issue for almost all of us.
I think that's very true. I think most people don't also appreciate the genetic factors that are involved. A lot of people eat no fat at all, and they still have very high LDL, which is the bad cholesterol.
Right.
Some people have high HDL cholesterol, which is protective. But also women need to realize that after menopause, their risk factors start to increase and their cholesterol profile actually gets worse.
They need to check their blood pressure, their cholesterol, and their glucose, along with their family history.
That's correct. Yeah. Family history is a very strong risk factor for having heart disease. So, for example, if your mother had a bypass operation or a heart attack before the age of 60, that should be a big warning sign, and you should be heading to your doctor to get your heart checked.
Now, Pat, let's talk about Friday's Heart in the Park celebration. The hashtag on Twitter, by the way, is JaxGoesRed. This is at Hemming Park downtown. Florida Blue will be there in force. What's going to be happening?
We're going to be doing screenings, actually, Melissa. So to what the doctor is talking about here is awareness is the first step in this process. And so screenings will be available for people at that time. It is on Wear Red Day. So nationally, that's the day to turn that out. And this has been a week of events. We had the kickoff at our campus the other night. With Florida Blue Goes Red, which is a difficult thing for us since
that's a big change.
Has that color in their mix. But it's a big statement on our part about how important this is, and the education and awareness is critical.
Yeah, you even just got a tweet just now from your competitor for leading Men Go Red for Women. I just saw it come across Twitter. Friday is National Wear Red Day. Everyone needs to wear red on Friday.
Absolutely.
To promote Go Red for Women. And if you come down to Hemming Park, this is from 11 to 2, free screenings, healthy food truck fair, and a big celebration in the park as Jax Goes Red. That's the hashtag, Jax Goes Red. So come on out and enjoy this on Friday and be part of this. It is American Heart Month. And Friday, don't forget to wear your red. Even Florida Blue is going to be wearing red on Friday. So if they can do it, we can do it too. So I didn't even think of that color thing. So that is a big culture shift for you guys.
Thank you for the plug.
Yeah, Melissa. Funny stuff. He's CEO Pat Garrity joining us in studio, and also cardiologist with Mayo Clinic, Dr. Carolyn Landolfo. It's American Heart Month. Women need to know their risk. Thank you so much for being with us.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
We're back in a moment.
High school football has always demanded sacrifice, but as players and families learn more about concussions, attitudes are changing.
Every Friday night, there's the games, and then Mom and I would go have dinner. And after dinner, it was just like a sigh of relief that there wasn't an injury that night.
A football family calling it quits. That's later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
For small business owners in the borderland of El Paso, Texas, you have to work both sides of the river.
If I didn't have a home in Mexico, I would not be able to do this. I know how to maneuver there, and I know how to maneuver here, and that way I've got one foot on each side.
I'm Kai Rizdal, doing business on both sides of the border, our election year series, My Economy, next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
WJCT and the Florida Theater are proud to bring me, Michael Feldman, and my show, What Do You Know, to the Florida Theater in Jacksonville on February 20th. We'll do the quiz, have some fun, enjoy the southern winter just a little bit. You bring the sunshine, I'll bring the sunscreen. Tickets available now at the Florida Theater box office by phone at 904-355-2787 or online at floridatheater.com.
Sponsored in part by Folio Media House.
I showed up for work the first day without any knives. I didn't know you were supposed to bring your own knives, so I borrowed one from the chef. And I was also wearing Nike running pants that were a little bit too tight underneath my apron, so I got a nickname on my first day, Chrissy Pants.
Join us next time for stories about the dangers, the pleasures, and the sometimes harsh realities of food. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Sinatra said, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. Well, we made it there. Snap Judgment Live in New York. The nation's top storytellers, including Tariq Black Thought Trotter from The Roots, our biggest, baddest, most ridiculous snap. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, they're a congregation of Catholic women serving continuously here in Florida since 1866, 150 years. The Sisters of St. Joseph of St. Augustine are the focus of a new documentary, Legacy of Faith, produced by WJCT's own Rich Connor. This film will premiere in the nation's oldest city this weekend. We're pleased to welcome right now General Superior Sister Jane Stoker of the Sisters of St. Joseph. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us, Father Tom Willis. He's the committee chair leading a year-long celebration of the Sisters. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having us.
So exciting to have you both here. Sister, let's begin with you. First of all, congratulations. 150 years of continuous service in Florida. That is really something.
We're very excited about it. Not just the excitement of all that's going on with the documentary, but more excited about the ability and the opportunity that we have had over these 150 years to give glory to God. That's what it's all about for us, and we're very excited that it's being shared in this particular media.
The film will document the 150 years of everything your order has done. And these are really incredible numbers, 52 elementary schools, a college, 4 hospitals, homes for children, just to name a few of the accomplishments over the decades.
Yeah, it is exciting. And I think in my own reflection on our ministries. What I was reminded of was that our founding, all the way back into the 17th century France, our founding was for the purpose of doing whatever a woman was capable of doing in order to live the corporal and spiritual works of mercy. Mm-hmm. And when we were brought over to Florida in 1866, it was primarily to be educators of the emancipated, the freed slaves. And yet, even though we had opened so many schools throughout the state, elementary and secondary and even on college level, the call and the purpose of our founding still had to permeate the state. And so it was, we found ourselves moving into hospitals, opening hospitals and orphanages and working with the migrants and just spreading out wherever the corporal and spiritual works of mercy could be performed, whatever we were capable of doing.
And the legacy continues to this day. Father Tom Willis, you are heading up a year-long celebration of this. Is it sesquicentennial?
Sesquicentennial.
Yes, sesquicentennial. So
we couldn't figure out what that word was for the 450th for St. Augustine few months ago.
But I know.
Sesquicentennial is for 150.
That's right. So this film premiere is sort of the capstone of all of this excitement,
it's
I guess.
It's the kickoff.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of other events that will be happening over the year. It'll culminate in September, the first weekend of September, when the sisters and everyone else will acknowledge in a celebration at the cathedral the actual 150th anniversary of their arrival, which was September 2nd, 1866. We will have Archbishop Wenske up from Miami as the principal celebrant for those liturgies, the bishops of the state of Florida, and I am sure a cast of religious thousands. The sisters have done a lot of work of putting together a 150th anniversary quilt, which will also be on display as part of the premiere and at the various events that will be happening over the next several months. It is an exciting time for them.
And this is sort of, in a way, a continuation of the 450th in that St. Augustine's roots in the Catholic tradition go back quite a long way.
When I realized a number of years ago that the sisters' 150th anniversary was going to come the following year after the city of St. Augustine and the parish celebrated its anniversaries, I thought, what a great next step. Mm-hmm. Because the sisters, as we've already said, have been a major part of the fabric of St. Augustine, of really all of the state of Florida. Bishop Estevez has this marvelous line, there's not an inch of soil that the Sisters of St. Joseph have not touched in the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. And that is so true. And, you know, here in Jacksonville, they were primary educators at Bishop Kenny, a lot of the parishes here. So there's people across this area immediately who are going to remember having been ministered to and taught by the sisters in some way, shape, or form.
How exciting. And in the meantime, people can come and be part of this Saturday night as this documentary premieres.
Yes.
It's a legacy of faith, the Sisters of St. Joseph. This is premiering Saturday evening at 14 Granada Street.
That's correct.
Yeah, and the
Flagler Auditorium.
That's in the Flagler Auditorium.
At 7 o'clock.
7 p.m., open to the public. This is a chance to come and see this work produced. We want to give full credit to WJCT's own very talented film and video wizard. I'm going to call him that. Rich Connor made this production. So kudos to you both. It's very exciting to see this recognition.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Again, that's A Legacy of Faith, the Sisters of St. Joseph, Saturday night, 7 p.m. in the Flagler Auditorium in St. Augustine, the address 14 Granada Street. Come on out and see this new documentary. And congratulations on the 150 years of service. Just ahead, find out about the most unique party around. We're going to go up to the other part of our listening area, to Fernandina Beach, right after this.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.
Stay connected. Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
On the next Jazz Night in America, exploring DIY jazz with music from the DC Jazz Festival.
It's donation-based shows for the most part. All the money from the door goes to the artists. It's just really just an open, inclusive situation for artists and musicians.
I'm Christian McBride. Join us on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Have you ever wondered what the future will look like?
Genomics will ultimately cure cancer.
I like to call this body 3.0.
You'll buy GPS dots in bulk.
Spare living parts fully integrate back into the body.
Generations after us say how ridiculous it was that humans were driving cars.
I'm Guy Raz. Join me each week as we look into the future on the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Sundays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, you're invited to a party so grand that Alice in Wonderland, Julia Child, even the Wicked Witch of the West will be there. It's all happening tomorrow night in Fernandina Beach at the Food for Thought Gala, a showcase for the town's beautiful new library, paid for by a citizen fundraising drive that brought in over $2 million. In true grassroots fashion, top restaurant chefs will make special gourmet dishes that are mentioned in popular books, and local actors will portray the iconic characters from these classic tales. Here to tell us all about it, former Fernandina Beach mayor and city commissioner, and now actress Arlene Philkoff. But wait a minute, she kind of looks like somebody else. Could it be Julia Child that I'm looking at here in Studio 5? Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. I am so pleased to be here with you this morning.
Now, wait a minute. You've got a rolling pin here. You've got pearls. And I'm actually kind of surprised you're not, like, covered in flour. Are you in character for this bash?
I am. Yes, I am. I am prepared this morning to talk about what I plan to cook tomorrow evening. And it's so good to be back in public radio. That's where I got my start, you know.
Oh, yes, Julia. I do believe that's true. Before you went on to international fame.
Yes, indeed. And in fact, I plan to make either bœuf bourguignon tomorrow evening or chicken fricassee. It depends totally on my butcher and what he has for me tomorrow.
Of course, because you must cook what's in season.
Absolutely. And what is the most fresh product?
Now, Arlene, let's go back to your real persona as former mayor of Fernandina Beach and tell me a little bit about this shindig that's happening up there tomorrow night.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Friends of the library at the Fernandina Beach Library Branch have been excellent partners with the city and with the county, Nassau County, in constructing an expanded library that, as you mentioned, is brand new. We double the space, we double the amount of technology, and we've done an excellent job with the Friends in establishing unique fundraising programs. So we had a storytelling slam for the past 2 years that was widely attended and very successful. And this event, Food for Thought, will combine chefs from many of our local restaurants, including Salty Pelican, Bar Zen, Cafe Caribou, among many others, and characters from books that have food at their source.
That's cool. Like Water for Chocolate, Harry Potter. What food from Harry Potter is going to be served?
Oh, that has to be a surprise.
Oh, it's a surprise.
Sorry. Yes, indeed it is. We have many surprises tomorrow evening.
Food from A Movable Feast, The Great Gatsby, many other classic books. This is such a great concept.
It is. The Friends have been very creative in coming up with fundraising ideas that are unique to both the community and I think to the region.
And it's incredible that you were able to raise, gosh, a citizen fundraising drive that raised $2 million?
We're close to
Jeez,
that, yes.
Louise, that's yes. incredible.
The project was a perfect example of a private-public partnership. The city and the county each contributed $600,000 to the drive, and the Friends have the $1.2 million left to
wow.
contribute. So we're very close to reaching our goal. We have $100,000 left
okay.
to raise.
Tickets available online at Fernandina, F-O-L. I guess that's Friends of Library?
Yes, it is.
FernandinaFOL.org. This is tomorrow night. It's the Food for Thought Gala Thursday night in beautiful Fernandina Beach. Now, Julia, you need to work on your she had this kind of loopy high register.
Yeah, she did.
No, it's more like, you must cook with confidence.
There you go.
You've got to get the voice a little higher in the upper register.
Yes, you do.
To cook with confidence
well,
now.
Thank you for that coaching. I needed that.
Sorry. I'm so delighted by this outfit. This is incredible.
Thank you.
I can't believe you came in costume. That just
Absolutely.
Makes my day.
And got up at 6 o'clock this morning to do it.
Oh my goodness. And you've even got a little patch on that says École des Gourmands.
Yes. This was a patch that my husband Paul designed for me and my two partners who conducted a cooking school in Paris.
Oh my gosh. What a great hubby you have.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, again, it is the Fernandina Food for Thought Gala. This sounds amazing. Tomorrow night in Fernandina Beach. Get on out and enjoy this. Great food, great entertainment, great characters like Julia here. I mean, former Mayor Arlene.
Either one.
Tickets at FernandinaFOL.org. I'll tell you, they really know how to party up there on Amelia Island.
Yes, we do.
You guys do it upright.
We do.
Well, thank you for coming all the way down here, Julia.
And thank you, Melissa.
And thank you for being here today. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Our podcast's available every day at iTunes and Stitcher, but you got to subscribe. Also, watch the show, video on demand at tvjax.com. Diane Rehm is up next to look at the Puerto Rican financial crisis. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. No show tomorrow. Instead, we'll air the quarterly program, Faith Matters. That's tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.